Hey, it's Darren Johnson, Campus XM. Tony Orlando and Dawn. That was the number one song in May 1975. And how do I know this? Because I am listening to America's Top 40 on the 70s channel. On the weekends, when I am out with the newspaper, I love nostalgic music countdowns. It's my thing. I was just listening to the Beatles channel, and they played the top 100 Beatles songs, as voted on by fans, I guess. And now on the 70s channel, they play Casey Kasem all weekend. And I realized this. I was on a long family road trip, and we had a rental car with Sirius XM, and Channel 7 is the 70s channel. And I was like bleary-eyed driving from Florida to New York, and I just listening for anything. And I was like, oh, wow, they have Casey Kasem on. And he died a few years ago at a very controversial death. His new wife wouldn't let his old, you know, the kids from a previous wife visit. And then the body was in, you know, contested. Who owns the corpse? That was contested. And I think the body was taken to Europe, or it was cryogenically frozen, and then it wasn't, and then, I don't know, they found the body on a tuna can in some freezer in Piscataway, New Jersey, and it was just awful the way he went out. But he was, you know, the voice of, I think, Scooby-Doo as well, or one of those characters. Casey Kasem, Lebanese-American, the American dream. You know, he had a golden voice and was able to turn it into a whole thing. And I used to like the American Top 40. I used to listen in the 80s. And I hear now it's Ryan Seacrest doing it. I can't listen to that. And the thing is, too, music today, I don't want to sound like one of those people. And I'm not. I'm not one of those people. I've analyzed it. But music today just is horrible. It's just all, there's no meaning behind any of the lyrics. They're just meaningless commercial lyrics. I think they write these songs to put them into commercials. And I noticed that within a few months sometimes, after a song leaves the charts, it's now a commercial jingle. So it's just a handful of people producing, and they record each track one at a time. It's not like you get the Eagles together in the studio and they record Hotel California all at once, all in the same studio. It's not like that. It's like they'll get some blonde person to kind of sing and in different keys to try to get it just right, and then they'll add some auto-tune, and she'll sing one line at a time or something like that. And then they'll have these, you know, it's not even studio musicians. It's more like a Casio keyboard where it'll just kind of play music people are expecting to hear. And there's no meaning behind the lyrics. They're just silly lyrics, if anything. They're like the songs you hear when you play the crane stuffed animal dollar game, you know, at an arcade. And it's like that little earworm type song is what they're going after with modern songs. So Ryan Seacrest, who's totally soulless, has a show and they count down 40 songs which pretty much sound exactly alike. I can't listen to that. But I used to listen in the 80s, and the 80s had a good variety of music. You could have anything from Rock Me Amadeus to Thriller to 1999 to Stray Cats to early Whitney Houston to Tone Loc, Funky Cold Medina, The Fat Boys, Blondie, The Cars. Like, that's a lot of variety there. I'm Turning Japanese by The Vapors. She Blinded Me with Science by Thomas Dolby. There's a lot of stuff in there. So it was, you know, there was a lot of variety. Now in the 70s, I was a little baby. I had a diaper. I barely could do anything. I was a latchkey kid. And I didn't even have the key. I would just kind of, I don't know how I got into my house, but I would have to walk home in first grade and be all alone. I knew how to make toast, and I was a little baby, so I wasn't listening to America's Top 40 at a young age, but I knew the songs from that era because the radio was always on in the car. And I do listen to music. I like music. So I knew a lot of those songs. So I listened to the 70s channel, and I don't know how anyone listens to AM/FM radio anymore. You'd have to be, I guess if you only have like a 5-minute commute, then it makes sense. But if you're a person that drives more than, let's say, 15,000 miles a year, if you're that kind of person that's driving a lot like I am, you need Sirius XM. Combination with that and some podcasts and maybe an audiobook or two. And that's what you can listen to, because you need better quality stuff. So on the Beatles channel, they're playing the top 100 Beatles songs. It's very interesting. A Day in the Life was the number one song, so I'm proud of listeners for picking one of their better songs and not picking, like, Let It Be or I Want to Hold Your Hand or one of those horrible radio songs. Hey Jude. So I'm glad they picked A Day in the Life, which is a complex song. And, you know, not a bad song. Woke up, got out of bed, dragged a comb across my head. So, good lyrics. And the Beatles, too, you could tell they were readers, or at least maybe Paul was. Because on the Paul songs, he refers to newspapers and paperback books, like Paperback Writer. He refers to reading a lot. And A Day in the Life, he had read a couple of newspaper articles. One was about a guy, a somewhat famous guy from that era, who's long forgotten, who died. He was speeding and he crashed his car. And then there was a separate story on potholes and how this little town was filling in its potholes. So he combined the two ideas into one song. And that's what a good poem does. If you ever want to write a good poem, that's the trick. Get two opposing thoughts and tie them into one thought. And you will have, as long as you have a minimum of words, you will have a good poem. And that's why songwriting, that's why poetry is so dissed today. And songwriting is our new poetry. The phonograph allowed songs to be recorded and transported and moved all over the country. And every wedding singer sings Hey Jude and you know, all these songs, Play That Funky Music, White Boy. You hear it every white trash wedding in America. These songs are now transported via records and then tapes and then CDs and now the internet. So the recording of songs is our modern poetry. And I listen to the 70s channel and they play these songs and I'm kind of surprised, and I write about this a little in the April issue, you can look it up, of Campus News. Just go to campus-news.org and look for the April issue, 2019. And, you know, what will be remembered and what will be thrown away? And that Tony Orlando and Dawn song was number one. And I listened to this a lot. And Tony Orlando and Dawn, or just Tony Orlando, he broke up with Dawn eventually. And Dawn was two people. They had a variety show at one point, and Tony Orlando was like this big mustachioed 70s looking guy and talented singer, and he had two singers who both were named Dawn. Now, I don't know if those were their real names. Dawn was a popular name in the 70s, or if they just did like the Ramones and they just took the name Dawn. They both took, like, all the Ramones took the last name Ramone, even though they weren't related. Like, did they do that? You know, were they Dawn Ramone, or are they just, was that a coincidence, or was it a stage gimmick? I'll have to look that up on Wikipedia. The last thing I looked up on Wikipedia was the Mamas and the Papas, because they play them a lot, too, on the 70s channel and the 60s channel. And I looked up, like, who are the Mamas and the Papas? I loved them as a little kid. Before I could buy albums, I would hear their songs on the radio, and they were very soothing. And, like, the Mamas and the Papas were a major band, and you only hear them now, really, on retro channels on Sirius XM and such. But they had Mama Cass, and there's the song, you know, the only one getting fat is Mama Cass, or something like that, they say. And it's in the song, and it's like, don't they know she's right on the stage? Like, Mama Cass was, I looked it up. She got up to 300 pounds. And it was exaggerated, too, because the other mama and the mamas and the papas was one of the Phillips. And she was the mother of China and Mackenzie, or no, China Phillips, who ended up being in the band Wilson Phillips. But she was a good singer in her own right, the mother. And she was an attractive, thin blonde. And then Mama Cass, it was 300 pounds, but she had singing chops too. And they both could sing really well. Mama Cass eventually went and had a solo career. But the band had a lot of good pieces. I guess in their era, though, they were considered kind of a throwback. But they had great harmonies, and they were kind of like a band that you might hear on Ed Sullivan Show. You know, they had good songs, weren't really controversial, but had good rhythms, and they had like a folksy type touch to their music. And in retrospect, these songs are pretty good. But I looked up what happened to the mamas and the papas, and Mama Cass, who broke free, died at age 33 when I was a little baby, and in the early 70s. And the rumor was, and this was in the era before the internet, obviously, and sometimes rumors would spread and they would become urban legend. The rumor was that she choked on a ham sandwich. And in a way, that's kind of the perfect rumor for someone who's 300 pounds. It wasn't true. She had a heart attack, and it was definitely related to her weight, but she didn't choke on a ham sandwich. And that was the rumor at the time, and everyone believed it up until, I don't know, until the internet maybe, and then people still believe it, though, to this day. But when the internet came out, they could release the coroner's report, and she didn't indeed die by choking on a ham sandwich in her hotel room, which was the rumor. Now, in those days, people that were obese, and they still do, but not as much, but people would die of heart attacks. It was not uncommon. John Candy, you know, was a hefty weight actor, and he died in his sleep. He was working on the set of a movie about, it was a comedy movie, I think it was like called Go East or Eastward Ho or something. It was a comedy about a bunch of cowboys who decided they didn't like the West, so they were going to head back to New York. And so they go in the opposite direction of all the homesteaders. They're going east. And it's kind of funny. It was a funny movie. That was the last movie. He died like in his trailer or in his hotel working on that movie. But he's in the movie. They just had to cut around it, I guess. So people did die. Chris Farley, you know, they died. Of course, they might have added drugs to it, too. So if you're obese and you do drugs and, you know, and in those days, they didn't have the blood pressure, the statin medicines and the blood pressure medicines, the cholesterol medicines and such. So obese people did die at a faster clip, especially back then. And people had heart attacks in general back then more, I think. I haven't seen a stat, but I think people were smoking too. So you had smoking, obesity, unfettered drug use, and lack of statins and blood pressure pills. And there you go. Person's dead. So she had a heart attack in her room. Coincidentally, she died at age 33, Mama Cass. I think it's Peter Nielsen or Nielsen, the singer. I think he just went by the name Nielsen. In his flat in England, which he would let musicians stay in. And 4 years later, Keith Moon, the drummer for The Who, died in that same exact flat. And he was also age 33. So one of those weird coincidences. If I were 33 years old, I would not stay in that flat. And I don't think that's being superstitious. I think that's just like playing the odds. If you're 33, and two people who were 33 died in that flat, maybe don't stay there. Don't stay there overnight. But how could Keith Moon have known? I'm sure they all talked about it. Hey, this is where Mama Cass died. No, she wasn't eating a ham sandwich. I don't know where you heard that. You know, I'm sure Nielsen said that. And then I heard another tidbit on the 70s channel. Nielsen, he was a big artist. I would hear him a lot on this America's Top 40 when I listened to the retro America's Top 40. Good singer, really good singer. He, though, hung out with John Lennon, and they got into a screaming contest one night, and his voice was never the same thereafter. He wasn't able to hit the same notes after the screaming contest. So, dumb on him. Why would you, you know, that's your moneymaker. At least John Lennon can play instruments, and if all you are is a singer, you better, like, protect that voice. I don't get that. You know, if you can't compose and you can't play an instrument, maybe you should protect your voice a little bit. So I'm on the New York State Thruway. You can hear it in the background. So I listened to this top 40 from the 70s, and I like it more when it's mid to late 70s than from early 70s. I don't think Casey Kasem had his act together in the early 70s as much, and he seems, he doesn't seem as comfortable in the position. He's more DJ-like. But by the end of the 70s, he's kind of cool, and he has some, you know, he's comfortable in his spot. And he's giving little stories, and he's adding a little bit more to it. And I'm hearing these songs, and I try to wonder why some of these songs you still hear today, and a lot of them you don't hear anymore, even though they had their moment in the sun. And sometimes they were one-hit wonders, but some one-hit wonders, they kind of last too. And then sometimes I hear a song, and I didn't realize that this song was remade later on and done better by someone else. Like the song Take On Me by A-ha, which has the classic video of the guy trapped in a comic book. I never knew that was a remake, but I heard the original, which isn't as good, on, I think, the 60s channel. And there was an original Take On Me, not nearly as good as the A-ha version. But I didn't know that was not an original song. So a lot of the songs I heard later, I didn't realize were remakes, and when I listened to them on here, it's interesting. One week I was listening, and Neil Young had the number one and the number two song. And I thought that was interesting, because Neil Young is a little bit edgy. And he beat out, like, Bay City Rollers, or whatever the band was. And then sometimes you'll hear that. You'll hear, like, a bubblegum band, and then you'll hear a real serious band right after. It'll be like, you know, the DeFalco family or something like that, and they'll have some bubblegum song, and then it'll be Neil Young or John Lennon or something like that, a more serious artist. And you know, it shows like what variety there was back then. There was one band, it was just like there were a lot of one-hit wonders that were really good regional bands. They were good in their region. In those days you could be a regional band, and they had hits in their region. And then they pulled it together, and then they had a national hit, and they got onto the American Top 40. And that must have been so exciting for them to listen to the radio and hear them on national radio. Casey Kasem, they would distribute the American Top 40 to all the radio stations via records, and the radio stations would, I guess they had whatever the equivalent of express mail was back then, and the radio stations would play them based on it was a weekly show, it was a syndicated show. So they would get these records and play, it'd be like four or five records to play the top 40. And it was kind of great, you know. I once, a radio station, they had a contest and you could win the records they got, and I won one week, and I got all these songs, like 40 great songs, on record, on vinyl, and I was able to play them. The number one song the week I got the records for was Rock Me Amadeus from Falco. That was the number one song. So, and they would have a little contest. Hey, can you name, what was the number one song? Whoever calls in first and knows what the number one song was gets the American Top 40 albums from the week, because they were just going to throw them out anyway. So I knew it was Rock Me Amadeus, and I called in and said in my little kid voice, Rock Me Amadeus, and they mailed it to me, and I listened to it, and not only that song was on there, but a bunch of other great new wave and 80s songs were on there, so it was good. I would listen to that all the time. I don't know what happened to it. Probably, like, when I left for college, all my albums were rifled through and sold, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, people are garbage. So, I don't know. Someone went through all my stuff and sold it all. So, that's that. You learn not to trust people. Like, I wish I had more trustworthy people in my life. When I was a kid, I really couldn't trust the people around me. Like, I had old, I got old baseball cards and coins and stuff at garage sales, and I kept them in a chest. And my mother and father were always off again, on again. They eventually divorced. But my father, like, went in once and stole, like, all my stuff. Like, when he still had a key to the house and took anything of value out of my trunk. You know, what? That's just, like, greed and selfishness. All right, yeah, maybe if I went to the garage sale and he gave me a couple bucks and I bought them, but they still were mine. You know, that's like if you buy someone a lottery ticket. They ask you to buy a lottery ticket, and they hit with the lottery ticket. It's not your money. You know, maybe you could tip that person, but it's not your money if you ask them to buy a lottery ticket for you, even if they didn't pay you back the original dollar yet. So I had people like this in my life. You know, other people weren't much better. My mother would take out credit cards in my name or student loans, and those were, like, impossible to pay back. It's just, like, it was really set me back. And so people aren't... I learned not to trust people at a really young age, but I try to act myself in a trustworthy way. Like, I'm putting my daughter through college, and I'm making sure that, you know, I'm trying to anyway, that she's not going to incur any debt. And that we pay for things, but whatever way we can. And, you know, that's the way to be. But anyway, listening to the top 40, it, like, brings me back in time. And I highly suggest that you invest in Sirius Satellite Radio. You could even listen to it on an app. And if you go to the gym, you never have to worry about having a playlist. There's hundreds of channels, and you can play whatever channel you want, and they're mostly commercial free. And you can go on your little elliptical or whatever it is and play, like, and there's rewind features. So if you like a song, you can play it again. If you hate a song, you can fast forward it. It's definitely worth the 10 or 15 bucks a month, whatever you can negotiate for this service. I don't know why more people don't do it. Seems like a no-brainer to me. All right, so I think I will end this particular podcast with a After the Fire segment. After the Fire is a segment where I talk about a band that is known as a one-hit wonder, but they really had a second hit. The band Men Without Hats is a Canadian band, and they had the big hit Safety Dance. Safety Dance, you hear it, there's extended versions, it's a mainstream song. You could hear it on the radio all the time if you listen to the 80s channel or the Sirius Alternative New Wave channel 33. The Safety Dance is a major song. It's out there. I used to listen to... I had a Chevy Impala, an older Chevy Impala, and it only came with an AM radio. It shows you how cheap in the early 80s American... This is why Japanese and German automakers took control of the market in the United States. Because American automakers were really complacent, and they really thought they owned the market. And they put out cars that had a million issues, and then they would only give you an AM radio. Like, in 1983 or whatever it was, you're only going to give someone an AM radio? In 1983, FM had been out for 20 years. And you can't... Maybe to Chevy, it cost 50 cents more for the radio with FM than the one with AM only. They still have to install a radio. They still have to put a radio in there. So why not at least give FM? But this only came with AM. So I went to a store called Zaire, or maybe it was called Ames. It later changed hands. And it was a discount store, similar to Kmart or something, but worse. And they had tape cassette decks that you could install in your car. So they were in, like, bubble wrap or whatever, like the shrink, plastic shrink wrap. And I think it was 20 or 30 bucks, which was a lot for me at the time, was the cheapest one. They had a cassette deck in it and an AM/FM radio. So I bought it for 20 or 30 bucks. And I figured out how to install it. I think I had, like, some kind of, like, idiot savant ability when I was younger. And I probably still have it, but I just don't use it. Where I could just do things. Whatever I set my mind to, I could do. So I took apart the dashboard and put it in the stereo. And then put it back together again so it looked halfway decent. And I had to buy a special plastic piece for, like, $4, too, to cover, like, where there were, like, there was some open space or something. So I had to buy some little adapter too so it would work on the Chevy Impala. And so it was like the stereo. I wish I had camera, you know, like I took a picture of it back then, because I'd love to see what I did and what it looked like. And it played cassettes. And one of the main cassettes I had in my car, and I didn't even have the case anymore, was Men Without Hats. And it was Rhythm of Youth was the name of the album. And it's a new wave classic album. It's a great album. And it had Safety Dance on it. And I think it had it twice. It had the extended version and it had the radio version of it on both sides, one on each side. And then it had a bunch of other songs, which were kind of cool. There's a song called Antarctica, which was, you know, real classic alternative sound, a lot of synthesizers and things of that nature. And I'd listen to it all the time. And because, you know, the summer comes, the tape got a little warped. And at one point, there was like a pause in the tape whenever I'd play it. And then it would restart again. You know, it would pause and then the music would keep going. So maybe a half second pause. And I always thought that was part of the album because the heat from the car, I guess, melted a small part of the tape. And it erased like a second of the tape. And I always thought it was part of the song. And then I got it later digitally, and I realized, oh no, it was just because I kept the tape in a hot car. But I would listen to that tape all the time, and the Safety Dance, the two versions, classic song. So you would think, all right, that's the end of that band, One Hit Wonder, Safety Dance. But they did try again, and they had a song called Pop Goes the World. It didn't do much. I think it barely broke American Top 40, but it didn't do much. They never play it anymore, although I have heard it, I think, in a casino. Sometimes casinos play retro 80s stuff, and this song, Pop Goes the World, it's a little soft, and a little trying a little too hard. It came out several years after, maybe the late 80s, several years after Safety Dance, and I think they were trying to get back that mojo that they had with Safety Dance, and they're trying a little too hard with this album. I did buy this album, and I think I did buy it on cassette, because I kept buying cassettes, because I had the cassette player in the car, even though CDs were out by then, and cassettes also were $2 cheaper, so the CD might have been 13 bucks, and the cassette was like 11 bucks or something, so I was still buying cassettes when cassettes were no longer cool, but the bands were still releasing them on cassette. So I did buy this album, and Pop Goes the World was their second attempt at being more than a one-hit wonder. It didn't really work out for the Men Without Hats. I hear they tour every now and then. There is there's a woman who does the Safety Dance in the Safety Dance video, and there's a whole Facebook page, a whole Facebook group devoted to who was that woman, because she wasn't a member of the band, and they found her. So look up that Facebook page if you are curious about the video from the original one-hit Safety Dance. But this is Pop Goes the World. So I will end with this. Listen to more podcasts on campusxm.com. campusxm.com. All right, listen or go to iTunes or go to any podcast app in the world. Type in campusxm. This is Darren Johnson. See you later.
Pop Goes the World by Men Without Hats.